Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
Are you ever? Who are you, sir? Are you Andrew David James?
I will be Andrew David James. Who do you want to be today?
I think I'll be Michael Sterling.
I'd rather be Amy Snowden, but I think today I will be Andrew David James.
That's a very tall bill to fill.
How are you, Michael?
I am good. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a crazy week, a hot week, but a beautiful day here in Sherman Oaks, yeah?
Yes, beautiful. Always
gorgeous.
Beautiful here in Sherman Oaks.
Mm-hmm.
Minus the humidity that we've been having. I'm not a big fan of that.
That's right.
Yeah. Makes my hair curl like one of our guests. Before we get into this, Andrew, let's thank our sponsors. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
We are indeed. And Andrew, you know what? I cannot wait to chat with our guests today because they are two very entertaining performers, both from television and the stage.
Michael, I agree. One is the real deal Southern Belle who earns a living making people wet their pants. Say hello to comedian Amy Snowden.
Hello, Amy.
Hi.
The other is a Hollywood heartthrob actor-singer who can charm the husk right off of the corn. Give it up for Chad Dorick.
You're here.
Thank you. Hi, Chad. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Before we speak to Amy and Chad, Andrew, how was your week?
Good. It was a good week. A little bit of a strange week. We were all over the place. I put a lot of miles on the car with jobs in Riverside and up in Santa Barbara. So looking forward to hopefully a little more calm and at-home time. How was your week? Did you see anything good this week?
I think I told you about, Carol King. We talked about that.
Yeah, beautiful.
Beautiful. And I'm still reveling in this Broadway musical.
I've heard so many good things this week about that show.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's if have you seen it? You too?
I've heard about it. Yeah. I haven't seen it, but I heard how great it was.
You should try to make it a point. It's coming down to Segerstrom in Orange County, which is their performing arts center.
You're really pegging me for living in Orange County.
Beautiful, supposed to be amazing. Of course, our good friends Sound of Ghost are still out on the road as well.
Yes,
I've been watching their updates too.
Lovely people that they were.
Yeah.
Tour's going okay for them?
Yeah, I think they're doing well. I saw some great photos of them in New Mexico, so that was fun to follow. How are your puppies doing? Are they holding up okay?
You know what? I think a little affected by this heat. I've had two, these are beagles, and I adopted them, so they're rescues, and they're lovely. We're still in that kind of getting to know each other phase, even though it's been like a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing what their background was, except coming from broken homes, you never know really what that means, and you try to figure it out based on their actions and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But the heat took them both down, and they got terribly sick. So they were probably compounded with eating something outside that they perhaps thought was good and didn't figure it out.
I have that same problem myself sometimes.
Unfortunately, all the carpeting that is in the house is an off-white color. So
now it's off-white.
Yeah, well.
Carpet cleaning bills skyrocket.
You know, when that happens, you're like on it like a leopard. You know?
Oh, but, my goodness.
But, you know, thank you for asking. You know, they're good. They're kind of the light of my life, so I miss them when I'm away from them.
Okay, but I have the light of Michael's life on my business card, so if that's not me, I need to make some serious changes here.
Oh, really?
Is that incorrect? It's the Beagles now. I see how it is.
Okay.
Shall we introduce these people?
I think that we should, yeah. Definitely.
Good people today.
From a small town in Oakdale, Louisiana, our first guest grew up a very awkward, quirky, shy kid. She started as a country songwriter, writing her own original songs, and then moved her way down to stand-up comedy. After arriving in Hollywood, she appeared on FX TV's Man Show, winning an all-female comedy contest. Other television credits include America's Got Talent and Comedy Time. She was also named a top five finalist in the John Lovitz Find Me a Comic contest. one of our favorite comedians. She now resides in Los Angeles and the OC, calling her living situation by county.
She plays all the major comedy clubs, the Laugh Factory, the Hollywood Improv, and the world-famous Comedy Store, where she says that she found her heart and soul. She has also traveled the road, opening for major headliners. After an already successful run at the 2016 Hollywood Fringe Festival, she returns to the stage for three festival-awarded encore performances of Casting Confessions from L.A. to L.A., July 16th, 24th, and 30th at the Actors Company in West Hollywood. Please welcome the beautiful Amy Snowden.
Who's back?
Hi, Amy. How are you?
I'm good.
Good to have you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So the title of your show, Casting Confessions from L.A., standing for Louisiana.
Correct.
To L.A.
Los Angeles.
Yes.
From Louisiana to Los Angeles.
Correct.
L.A. to L.A. I like that. Where
people
did you
get
come up with
that
title?
Off the bat?
What, you asked
me?
I'm sorry.
I think that's a good one. So do people get that right off the bat, or do they have to see it in print, or do they have to hear your show to finally get the Louisiana connection?
I think they're getting it already. I mean, the logo says it shows it on the flyer, but
very
I think
cool.
They get it already. Mm-hmm.
And one word out of your mouth, I'll bet they get a clue here or there, yeah?
Yes. Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about where this show came from, the Casting Confessions, and where you came up with the idea?
I went to hell and back, and I decided, I best make something funny out of this. So I was pressed to come up with a title really, really quick, just like one day. I couldn't get the title together. It originally was called "If I Had Known Then What I Know Now," but I didn't think that was catchy enough. So I needed.
That's true, though. I hear you on that one. How right? many times would I like to go back a few years ago?
Right.
Yeah.
So one day I was pressed for it, and I was just thinking, and all of a sudden it hit me. I said, Casting Confessions from L.A. to L.A. That's it. That will tell it all. And so it was maybe just a God-given higher power title. I don't know.
Wow.
And what a nice honor to receive the encore performances from the Hollywood Fringe Festival.
Yes,
right?
Very much. Yeah, I was also nominated for three other awards, which I was completely shocked by.
Cool.
I had no clue, didn't win them, but I, you know, I was nominated just like Meryl Streep. Well, she wins all of hers, but you get me, you feel me.
You got something in common with Meryl there. I like that. Very
so
nice.
Those were what? Best show, of course. Best performance.
I got nominated for Best Solo Performance, Best World Premiere, and Best Show of the Fringe Festival.
Oh, wow.
Like, what?
Oh, wow, cool.
Are they on acid or something?
Now, does anybody ever question you about your name, any relation to Edward Snowden?
Every day.
Really?
Every single day. And I'm just about to claim him, because if this comedy career didn't work out, they just came out with the movie Snowden.
Right.
So I'm thinking that I might could get some fame off of that, because, you know.
Apply for some royalty checks coming in.
Absolutely, absolutely. But my daddy, I tell people my daddy disowned a couple brothers in the South, which is absolutely 100% true. So I think there may be a connection there. I don't know.
Really?
Wow.
You should go and find out.
Right?
Yeah, right.
Or run and hide, depending on how it goes.
Yeah, I might want to hide. Yeah.
How funny.
Because, you know, I always say this about comedians, and it's and I think it rings true. We've said it before in this program. To me, stand-up comedy is, you know, very difficult to do unless you have this innate sense of humor about yourself that, you know, just touches people in mm-hmm. a very particular way. And and of the videos that I looked at that you've done, you did that, and that's when I wrote your publicist quickly, and I said, "Oh, we have to have her on the show." So, because I got
thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you're it's very different. Your style is very different, and I like that, you know. But I always say about women or men who can deliver comedy like that, you make the best dramatic actors.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever thought of that? Do you? Surely you want to act. If you were offered a TV show or a movie, you'd do it, right?
I was in a movie a couple years ago called Shadows in Heaven, which never got released in the United States. It was released in Armenia.
Only in heaven.
Right. And I think there was a language barrier when they hired me. I really do. It was for a dramatic role. And I was angry at a relationship. I'd gotten a fight the day before, and I thought, like, I'm really pissed off. I read the sides. They were really serious, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I can't do this. But I went in, and they needed two blondes. And the guy was looking at me. He couldn't even speak English. And I thought, okay, I don't know. And so I got a call that I got the role.
Wow.
And I thought, okay. But then I thought it was a conspiracy because I had to go... I had to go underneath a parking garage and be shot. Yeah, and so they gave me the gun to hold, and when I held it, I thought, okay, he wanted to show me it was fake. Well, when he walked away, I thought, oh, my God, he went and changed it. Oh. He changed it to a real gun, and they're going to blow my freaking head off when they come back in. And so the first shot fired at me was like,
right?
So it was very dramatic, and it was great. And I think they took the first shot.
Half reality show, half movie.
It was real. So that was the one dramatic piece that I did, but I'm tapping more into my dramatic side. I actually have a very serious side. I mean, all of this is very, this tragic is very serious, actually. So I'm open for that, but I would rather do comedy.
Yeah.
Well, there's no doubt that from what I saw of you, you definitely find the humor in everyday situations, and certainly even in some hard things, you certainly find the humor. I'm sure that's helped you cope with certain things throughout your life, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I thought, you know what, if this is going to be so painful to me, I'm going to find a way to, when I make people laugh on stage and they laugh at my problems, well, then my problems don't seem so bad.
Right.
Because comedy is about relating. So if they're laughing at it, they must have experienced it or felt it somewhere in their life.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Absolutely.
And or certainly, you know, comedians generally say things that people who are thinking them would never say. But and
right.
That's the beauty of, you know, discovering your favorite comedy.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny you say that. When I was a kid, my mom used to say to me, Amy, you only say things out loud that other people think. She said, why do you do that? And I said, I don't know. I have to say them. I need to acknowledge what I see. I just need to. I have to. It was like my therapy to get it out of me. And inappropriate and often taken at wrong times.
Listen, people. Yes, she could have
get
been
angry.
She could have been raising Lisa Lampanelli.
You know.
I know, right? She's a mean old bitch. I heard. I have a comedian friend who lived with her, and it wasn't good.
With Lisa Lampanelli?
Yes. She built a fence around her cats and wouldn't let my friend go. I won't name these people, but she knows who it is. Wouldn't let my friend go on the outside of her fence of her cats. I mean, it was just like a fence right in the middle of the apartment. Yeah, she was not nice at all. That's what I heard.
Now, that's funny. Yeah, terrible. Yeah.
One of the things that I found hilarious was you were talking about the recession and things that people might do to survive the recession, and you came up with the idea. And it's funny to watch you because it's not a character, but you almost take on a different personality. You can tell you're a survivor in a lot of ways. And you say a girl who goes into fetishes to get herself through the recession. And one of the things you picked was a toe fetish. And I see you're wearing open-toed sandals today. I'd like to thank you for that personally.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a foot fetish?
No, but I could quickly develop one, I think, here. It was so funny to watch
give
you.
Give it some toe.
Right? Toe. Yeah. And you watch how people, you know, did a ton of different things. How did you come up with that idea? And this is something that you could take further. Yeah, you did an entire music video on it, right?
I did, which I have the number one foot video on YouTube. And there are thousands of foot videos. I mean, just, you wouldn't believe the foot videos. Just people in their house putting their feet on the table and someone licking them. just the weirdest stuff. Mine was really produced and serious.
Yes, it was.
This was like, and Tiger Woods was in the news at that time, so I tagged Tiger Woods on it, and I got so many hits on it.
Now, if people want to go watch this, how can they find it? What's it called, and where's it at?
Toho, TOEHOE. I added an E on the end, so I didn't want to be considered a ho, like a ho, H-O.
Very nice.
You know?
Very
but,
nice.
The way it came about was that I needed money, and the recession was here, and I had no money. I had no car. I totaled my car in L.A., and I was desperate. I was desperate. My friend called me. She said, you want to make $20 off your toes? And I said, what do you mean? She says, I don't know either, but let's go do it. And I said, hey, I'm very open-minded, and I love to get a good story. So we went down to this foot party, and I'm telling you what, we're walking up the stairs, and men usually stare at your boobs and your butt as you're walking in a party. These people they stared right down at our feet. And my friend said, what are they looking at? I said, they're looking at our feet. So It was quite different. Every guy wanted something different. I remember one time, I didn't put this in my show. I think I'm going to add this to my show. But one time I went and got a new pedicure, and I lined my toes up with diamonds. And so when I got to the party, this guy asked me for a foot session. So I laid down on the floor, and he deep-throated my foot.
Oh, my goodness.
And then he started going,
oh, no.
And I said, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Are you okay? Are you okay? And I looked down, and he had swallowed one of my diamonds off of my toe.
How do you claim that on the insurance
when
you
go in? What kind of a party was this?
That was the footnight.com.
Oh, okay.
That was how I came up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a popular event.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Amy Snowden, who's talking not only about feet today, but also about her amazing show that just premiered at the Hollywood Fringe Festival. Tell me about some of the other comedy that you've done. Who are your comedy influences, and who did you fall in love with that you kind of modeled your style after, if anyone?
I didn't model my style after anyone. I didn't really watch a lot of stand-up comedy growing up. I just knew that I was funny. I'm from a small town, so my daddy would watch the news. He wouldn't. At 3:30 when he came on, he was like, okay, son of a bitches, it's over. You guys, you know, Brady Bunch is off. It's my turn. So I really didn't see stand-up comedy growing up. What was the question again?
Influences or other comedians that you admire and where you developed your own style.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I just did my own thing of what I thought was funny. As I started stand-up comedy, I entered a comedy class in Louisiana.
Cool.
And I thought I was going to go up.
They have comedy classes there?
They did. I don't know if they do now, but they had one at the University of New Orleans.
Wow.
The college. I tell people I went to college there, which is bull because I never went to college a day in my life. But I was there, and I thought I would go up and talk about, you know, how I love to take Vicodins and Xanax and stuff like that. But nobody was laughing. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this is not going to work for me. So I was terrified that it wasn't going to work for me. So as I'm walking onto the stage to do the performance, like 200 people, and I thought, well, you know what, screw this. You know, maybe it's not going to work for me. And as I walked on the stage, people just started laughing so much. I thought, oh, my gosh, I am a stand-up comedian. This is what I am. So it was only by my own influence. I didn't have any outsiders to inspire me until I got to L.A. and I started watching comics who were uncharted talent that have never made it onto television. Yeah, they've done little television spots here and there, but they all should have, like, their own TV show. I think they're better talent in these clubs than there are on television, mm-hmm. to be honest. I mean, I do like some comics on television, but none of them inspired me, really. Maybe their story. Well, Whoopi Goldberg has a little segment on YouTube about doing a one-woman show, and that really pushed me over the edge to do my one-woman show. The way she spoke about it really helped me.
Cool.
It also helped that Steven Spielberg directed that.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she left that part out.
Well, she created it, and then
it was Spielberg or Nichols or one of
Mike
one of
Nichols.
Those,
it was Mike Nichols. Nichols. Yeah, Mike Nichols. Yeah, but he came to her show though, yeah. So you didn't watch it correctly. He came to her show.
He directed it on Broadway.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
What about people? You know, America, I think, labels Lucille Ball as probably the funniest woman ever on television. Do you think that? Do you believe that?
I've been told that I am reminded that people, I act like her in some ways, very ditzy and say things or stuff like that. Is she the funniest woman on television? She's very funny and very popular. I think I have some friends that are funnier.
Wow. I think that, you know, I agree with you. I think she was very funny when she was on television. But I also think that there's a point in everyone's life, in whatever we do, where we need to stop doing what we do, mm-hmm. and just kind of relax and enjoy the rest of our lives. I think that she kind of passed that mark on television to where she wasn't funny anymore. Hmm. Mm. Terrible thing to say? I don't know. Do you agree?
Well, I think that...
Every incarnation of I Love Lucy, which became something else and something else and something else,
yeah.
You know, went on forever.
Right.
and to the point where her grown children, your children, were acting on the show.
You know, it's interesting that with Lucille Ball, I don't know that you can necessarily judge her the same way you do others, is that she was an innovator as well. You know,
right. No,
you
she
don't,
was.
No, you don't take away from Jackie Robinson because he didn't hit the most right. home runs ever. You know, he did something nobody else was capable right. of doing at that time. I think with her as well, she came from radio, stepped into television as a strong woman and stood up and did something that
terrific
nobody
so.
Else was yep. doing. So, yeah, I think you're right. The comedy may have suffered because she had so many other business interests as well. So.
Well, and I think that she just kind of, you know, I guess, I can't imagine being that famous. And, you know, when you are, I think that you probably think entirely differently than people who aren't.
Right.
And she didn't feel it was time to stop, perhaps, mm-hmm. or maybe...
Maybe she pushed it too far, you
I think so. You know, doing the motion picture musical MAME that she did, I think was, you know, a very... You know, marquee casting choice by the producers, and that there were plenty of other women that deserved to be in that role as mm-hmm. opposed to Lucille Ball, who couldn't sing. But,
yeah.
You know, that didn't really take away from her performance because she's always been an amazing dramatic actress. And in those moments in that movie, she certainly, you know, showed that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just kind of, you know, I loved her so much that when I saw her not being funny anymore, it kind of broke
took
my heart
away from
a little
it.
Bit. Yeah.
Yeah, like Babe Ruth trying to round the bases with two dead knees.
It.
Yeah. Amy, you've talked a lot about kind of the lies and the things you've experienced here in Hollywood, and you've turned a lot of that into comedy, but some of that has a very serious point as well in the industry we work in. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, I was approached by many agents and managers, even celebrities, over the years that have told me, you know, you got something, you've got something. And I had a lot of agents and managers that wanted to represent me. But it all turned out to be lies. It all turned out to be, okay, they want to sleep with me or, you know, like the casting couch, basically. And I did partake on the casting couch a bit. Because I thought
to get on this show or other shows? Because this is new information here. Hold on.
If only you knew.
I wondered how we kept getting such great guests, Michael. Good work, my friend.
That's great. No, not on this show. But
why not?
But everything. But I think I go into every situation a little skeptical. Because that's all I've ever seen, honestly. The only thing that I think was real, and I do believe they thought I had talent, all these people. But I do think they wanted in my pants as well. So, you know, but there was one guy, and I will say his name because I will forever love this guy. His name is Mark Schulman, and he worked for 3 Arts Entertainment. And he became a huge agent over there, manager over there. He saw me on stage when I was very young. I'm still young, but when I was very, very young, and he said, I want to take you out of the clubs. I want to put you on the road, and I want to bring you back to L.A. and get a sitcom for you.
Wow.
And I didn't understand the entertainment business. I thought, no, you're crazy, man. I mean, I just got here from Louisiana. I mean, I ain't going on the road now. So I didn't listen to him. And he said, let me just guide your career. Who says that?
Wow.
Let me just guide your career. And didn't want anything from me. Had a wife, had kids, didn't want anything from me. But I wasn't ready. I wouldn't have seen the toe parties, and I wouldn't have seen all the things that I've done to build my comedy. And even at that time, I didn't even know what made me really funny. I didn't even know why people laughed. I just remember being in the 5th grade, and my friend looked at me, and she said, you're the funniest person I've ever met in my life. And I said, why? And she said, I don't know, but you are. So, you know, I had to learn. I had to watch my videos. I had to listen to my voice and hear myself. Well, I hate my voice. I think we all hate our voice, right? And I had to learn what made me funny, but... I'm just skeptical with all these agents and managers. And I had the biggest ones approaching me, but they all wanted something in the end that I, you know.
Wow. Well, I'm shocked to know that in Hollywood.
That unheard of.
Unheard of.
You know, it's interesting because I think that is one of the things that makes your comedy so honest, is that you don't hold anything back. You talk about everything, and it's a lot of fun to listen to. And more than anything, I think it speaks to a group of people who need to hear that right now, people who need to hear what's going on in Hollywood and what you've experienced to get to where you are, which, despite what you've said about, you know, the struggles, there's certainly a good amount of success there. Your show was so well-received, and your videos are hilarious. So go to AmySnowden.com, is that right? AmySnowden.com.
Amy, I had to, well, I was so broke that I lost AmySnowden.com.
No. So,
I couldn't keep it up, so now I'm AmyMSnowden.com.
Thank
like,
you.
My middle name is Marie, so it's AmyMSnowden.com. That some bitch took AmyMSnowden.com.
Some kid in the middle of somewhere out there. That's so funny.
Exactly.
And casting confessions from L.A. to L.A. Place at the Actors Company, 916A North Formosa Avenue, West Hollywood, and for three shows only, on July 16th at 9 p.m., July 24th at 7:30 p.m., and July 30th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are only $10. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can purchase those tickets online by just going to Find Amy on Facebook at Amy Snowden Comedy and Twitter at Amy M. Snowden.
Mm-hmm. Amy, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Will you hang around with us a little bit more?
I will. I'd love
to. Okay. Good deal.
No, I'm belling now. My segment's over. I'm out
of here. Yeah, right? She's already gone.
That happened to me. I had a graphic designer. Well, Chad Dorek. There's no other Chad Doreks in the world. And I had a graphic designer who had done postcards for me when I didn't pay my website, whatever, service fee. He bought it and tried to sell it back to me.
Ooh, that's conniving.
Yeah.
That's conniving. Does he still work for you?
Yeah. He's my agent.
It was my dad.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
That is low.
Right?
Right?
Yep. Wow.
We have an arts calendar, Andrew.
Indeed.
Shall we
Let's
kick that off here?
Good
Perez
idea,
Hilton, ladies and gentlemen, hosts Broadway Under the Stars, celebrating the 35th anniversary of Dreamgirls, Sunday, July 10th at 8 p.m. at the John Anson Ford Amphitheater. Produced by Chris Isaacson presents, this one-night-only event will star Independent Spirit Award winner Cheryl Lee Ralph, Emmy Award winner Loretta Devine, and Tony Award and two-time Grammy Award winner Jennifer Holliday. Iona Morris will direct, with musical direction by Kenneth Crouch and choreography by Lee Martino.
Also scheduled to appear are special guests Mary Wilson, Sharon Catherine Brown, Frenchie Davis, Ray Garcia, Lissy LaFontaine, Jeffrey Scott Parsons, Amber Stevens West, and Broadway's Matt Zarley. Though sellout is expected for this event, you can still try to purchase tickets online at fordtheaters.org. That's fordtheaters.org. Or by calling 323-GO-1-4. That's G-O, the number 1, and F-O-R-D. A portion of the evening's proceeds will benefit the Diva Foundation, which is also what I was in high school, the Diva Foundation.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. A lot of my friends
didn't
like
that. You
were
in all the clubs.
And, of course, the Actors Fund. The John Anson Ford Theater is located at 2580 Cahuenga Boulevard East in Hollywood, the Hollywood Hills adjacent to the Hollywood Bowl.
In the Hollywood Hills. Have you been there? Have you ever?
I have. I like the Hollywood.
Have you been to the John Anson Ford Amphitheater?
Yes, I have.
Yeah,
very
beautiful.
Nice, yeah.
Beautiful place to work.
And
just
a little bit of
right
an interesting
size.
Space as well, because it's right down there in the thick of everything, but a little bit hidden, which is nice
right,
as well.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Parking's a little wacky.
Horrible
but,
traffic there.
Yeah. Where, you know,
where
everywhere.
Is there not?
Yes,
right.
Look out this window.
My mother tried to tell me Louisiana has bad traffic. I said, oh, no.
Yeah, it's
no,
tough
no,
to hear
no,
that.
No, honey.
Yeah.
You don't want to hear
But
that.
Then I called home and complained about the weather out here the other day and said it was hot, and they said that the humidity back in Kentucky, where I'm from, was so brutal that they walked outside and started sweating. They just started sweating as soon as
sure.
they stepped outside.
Yeah,
the
of course.
Water just clings to them. So, yeah, I learned I can't complain about that. They can't complain about traffic.
No.
It's a nice codependent relationship we have. So,
my family's from Kentucky. Where are you from?
Lexington. Grew up in Lexington.
They're from Louisville.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to need you to leave the room immediately.
I mean. I'm from Long Beach. So
nice. No, it's interesting. I love Louisville. A surprising amount of arts in Louisville.
Yeah.
Really great artistic.
Theater.
Absolutely. Really great artistic community there as well.
The man who Andrew is speaking to is our next guest, ladies and gentlemen. He is a Southern California native. He first realized he wanted to sing when, as a child, he had been singing in church and was leading the congregation. The experience was so mesmerizing that when he inadvertently skipped a verse, the entire church followed, giving
wow.
him a sense of power and command. Schooled at the Orange County High School of the Arts and the University of Southern California.
Well, that's a lie.
Briefly. He has since released two CDs and become part of the top and was became part of the top 12 contestants on Grease, You're the One That I Want, an NBC network televised competition where the leads for the Broadway revival of Grease, directed by Kathleen Marshall, would be chosen. He is also model for Skechers, Italian Vogue, and Nordstrom, and has been the narrator on various programs televised on E! Entertainment. He also co-starred in the award-winning off-Broadway musical Altar Boys, and more recently in the hit L.A. world premiere musical Cyrano, a modern-day spoof on Cyrano de Bergerac. But he's here today to discuss his role in Much Ado About Nothing, opening July 23rd through August 21st at the TU Studios in North Hollywood. Give it up for Chad Dorick.
All right, Chad.
I can't believe you talked about Skechers.
Yes, we cover it all. Yeah. We do our homework, sir.
Wow.
Now, interesting, yeah. When I was singing in church, they asked me to stop and quietly leave the building.
Yeah.
I think your experience was probably a little more influential.
It was pretty funny. I was singing the Our Father, and I was probably 8, 9.
Right.
And I skipped a whole verse, or like a whole phrase, and Everybody knows the Our Father. And the congregation just... they like paused.
Go with it.
And then they just went right with me.
Wow.
And I said,
Now I know what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Were you Catholic? Are you Catholic?
Yeah. Yeah, I was Catholic.
I am Catholic, and I was a Catholic altar boy.
I was an altar boy.
Really?
Yes.
I had a terrible experience. I did.
No, I didn't. Experience. I had a fabulous education in my Catholic school, and everything was peachy keen, so I guess one of the lucky ones.
Well, no, my education was spectacular. It was serving mass that I had experience.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow.
It was weird. Not
that weird.
No. No. Not that kind of weird.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean,
the priest slapped me in the face in the front of the.
Well, that's how I start every show, Michael. You don't mind it now.
You probably deserved it, Michael. Let's be honest.
He slapped you in the face?
Yes, he did. And Chad said I probably deserved it. And maybe so, but I mean, by the standards of the pageantry of the Mass.
Yeah.
It was the last Mass of the day,
uh-huh.
And my parents, of course, my whole family always came to the Mass that I was involved in, and proudly sitting out there. This is in the days when your dad was in a suit, your mother was wearing a hat, and all those things. And I was preparing the tray with the little napkin and water for the priest to wash his hands before he went into the serving of the communion, and I could not find a clean linen towel in his office in the back. Searched high and low, and I simply couldn't. So I took the one that was the least
dirty.
Yeah, and folded it up and put
tried to hide it.
Like a good performer would, right? Going to make the show go on. Exactly. Yeah.
And I was sweating, and I made my entrance, and he being very officious, and he took this up, and the second he felt the moisture on this he took it, and he slapped me across the face.
Wow.
In front of the whole congregation. I was so mortified.
You're how old at this point, Michael?
I was like 11, 10, something like that.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
And it was, I was destroyed. I mean, I couldn't even go to school the next day. I was so bothered. My parents said, you stay home, stay in bed.
Yeah.
And I for that reason, never withdrew from being an altar boy.
And to this day, the Catholic Church still won't sponsor our show. It's interesting because I heard so many people, that is such an interesting time in the Catholic culture that, there were still so many sacraments and still so much ceremony. And very quickly, people started to want to let go of some of that. And you probably caught that right at the worst moment.
Yeah. Perhaps. But so when I meet anybody that's been educated in the Catholic school system, then I can never complain about that. But the religious part of it is, I'm still Catholic and I don't necessarily go to Mass per se, but when I do go to the Catholic Church is when I am trying to figure out something that's really personal.
Right.
And I will sit in that church.
It's a great place to meditate.
Yes, and I will
pray and
talk to God and say a rosary and do what I need to do to get over that.
I loved the religious part when I was in school, and I think, let's get into hot water, guys. I think that having some sort of honor or ethic in elementary education is important.
And see, so I'm against honor and ethic.
Right.
I don't enjoy it. I think that it causes a lot of problems. I teach my children no ethics,
yes.
and you'll make a lot of money. That's really my goal in life is to help them. Now, the part that you're playing here, you're playing a role that is obviously has a basis in a lot of religious ceremony, right? I mean, the scene between Benedict and Beatrice happens in the chapel, right? He has her on the ground with her sobbing. Did you bring any of your Catholic heritage into that role?
No, not even a little bit.
Wow.
And we're not playing it that way.
Really?
Yeah. They have a different spin on this.
Interesting. Yeah. Tell me about that. How'd that happen?
Well, we have a great director, and it's a comedy. And, you know, a lot of people... My director started on Broadway. She started in a Shakespearean play on Broadway, directed by John Dexter, who's one of the great directors of all time, directed Equus and many other things. So she looked at things differently. She worked in England, and her name's Gloria Gifford. And the way this works is we're producing this through the theater company, which we have through the school in which we all study. So Gloria is our teacher, and then we created a theater company out of the school.
And the school is called?
The Gloria Gifford Conservatory. Mm-hmm. And so then we produce these plays, and Gloria is our director. And so we look at things, and, you know, it's a comedy. And so there will be some danger, and there will be some excitement and some sword fights and things like that. But this is a sexy comedy, and we're not looking at it like a lot of people do literally. We're looking at it within the irony, and and so that scene, we haven't been rehearsing it with her weeping.
The show that you're doing is also fueled with music.
Yeah, right. we're putting in some rock and roll songs. Yeah.
Now, where do the lyrics come from? Are they Shakespearean lyrics? Or are they original lyrics?
No, not original.
Wow.
We're doing real rock and roll cover songs. Yeah, I can't say which ones yet because we're waiting for the rights to come through. But yeah, no, it'll be songs a la Elvis, Michael Jackson.
That are being sung.
Those kind of things.
That's interesting.
That we're going to just pluck in there and make it kind of raucous and fun. And, you know, the point is that Shakespeare has been around for so long. And my dad came to see the last we've done so far at the school, The Tempest and Comedy of Errors.
Wow.
And The Tempest is hard to follow if you're not
included.
My dad came in. He's from Kentucky. He's a construction worker. Not the most savvy theater goer. And
Dad, if you're listening, sorry about that.
Right. he would agree. Great guy. He got it 100%. So that's our mission. Our mission is to make it very accessible, very fun, very sexy. And, you know, so people can clue into it, because that's what it was. It was body. Shakespeare was body.
Absolutely.
When they did it. So
Absolutely.
People, Americans especially, make it so precious.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're not doing that. We're making it really fun.
And I think that you've just, by explaining what you're doing with it, you've opened the door to a whole other audience of younger people, too, that relate to it differently.
Yeah, and, you know, look, this is Los Angeles, so the cool thing is that you've got really great actors, but most of them are going to be easy on the eye. And so we've got this great group of really great-looking, really exciting actors doing Shakespeare, and people come, old, young, whatever, people from the neighborhood in North Hollywood, and they just kind of tumble in off the street, and every time we've done a show, every time people go, I can't believe that you're doing this. I've never seen theater like this.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, welcome to our 49-seat theater in North Hollywood, guys. Doing big things over here.
Andrew David James just did a little something with Shakespeare and the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Shakespeare scenes intertwined with Beatles songs called Shakespeare and the Beatles, and it was directed by Alan Hunt, who had this concept of saying, look, the themes are so universal. 400 years ago to the 1960s, essentially the themes didn't change.
At all.
The same thing. And it's fascinating how many different things you can do with Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, I've played Benedict 6 times. It's
Oh my goodness.
Favorite roles, never with rock songs. That's an amazing, and there's a reason for that too, by the way. But it's amazing that you've had that opportunity, because it's so hard to find a new take on Benedict. Each time I've played him, it's been with a different Beatrice, and you try to resort to what she's giving you to change yourself, because you can't change much of the role. But like when he's got one of my favorite lines in Shakespeare, when he says, "And I would that I could find in my heart that I had not a hard heart, for truly I love none."
Yeah.
And you think, he sat down and wrote those words to make it that beautiful, and it lends itself to musicality. So.
It really is musical, I mean, by definition. It's in tempo, but Yeah, I mean, what we're doing with it is we have double cast, and so we're...
That explains the long cast list on the, yes. on the news release.
Yeah,
right?
It's a
cast of thousands.
We're double cast. So I'm creating my character, but I also am sort of co-creating it with my counterpart, whose name is Danny Siegel. And, we're making our Benedict almost like Antonio Banderas' Zorro. In the
nice.
Of Zorro, or a lot like a Cary Grant in Gunga Din or something
Very
like
cool.
that, where it's... quick of the tongue and the quick wit, but, at the end of the day, this is the romantic lead,
Now, are you setting it in Renaissance times? So what's the time frame?
Yeah, well, we're putting it in, the ambiguous Shakespearean right. time.
Random antiquity.
Nobody really has the money to rent costumes and do all that stuff. So we're creating our costumes, and what we do with our stage and our costumes is always a miracle.
Cool.
In that small space, because we've got a large group of people who really work very hard to make everything look spectacular. So the fact that there's 35 people in our cast means that our production values are always higher than the rest of the small theater around North Hollywood. If you come see our shows, you'll see typically really glamorous sets and really opulent, great costumes and makeup and hair and
wow.
props. And yeah, so because there's so many people that contribute and also just having many people on stage elevates the energy of an mm-hmm. entire production.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. How many people are in that company? Because it really is a huge paragraph of names.
I really don't know the exact answer. I'd say 30 people are probably in the play.
Wow.
And
almost
not everybody,
as many people would be in the audience.
Yeah. Not everybody will be on stage on the same nights because, like I said, we're double cast. But the ensemble, some nights when I'm not on as Benedict, I'll go on an ensemble role. And the same thing with, the Beatrices. We have 3 or 4 Beatrices
wow.
that are, switching through. And so it's really an exciting production. You'll never see the same thing twice, that's for sure.
That's the beauty of theater.
Yeah.
That's right.
That
Absolutely.
The beauty of theater, right?
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Chad Dorick today on LA Talk Radio here, talking to him about Much Ado About Nothing, which opens July 23rd at TU Studios.
What does that stand for?
Theater Unlimited, but that's just the location
yeah.
that we're, we rent.
You're right. Not associated with that company, though,
no.
as I see.
No.
Interesting.
So, free parking, we might as well say
yes,
that.
Yes,
that's always
great.
Everybody wants to know
North
about
North Hollywood,
that.
The parking's great. We're right around from idle hour, get a drink, come over.
That really is the great thing about that area, isn't it? You go see a show, but you also have so much that you can go do after. You can
yeah.
go for a walk. I love walking around those blocks down
yeah.
there. I think it's just a great area. It's very vivid, very live, yeah.
Tickets are very affordable at $25.
Mm-hmm.
Reservations, simply call 310-366 5505.
Or, of course, you can visit www.tix.com. Much Ado About Nothing. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is one of my favorite shows, of course, but I got to ask you one question, Chad. How much have you cut out of the script? Is it the entire script or is it cut down?
Yeah, it's definitely cut down. We're still in the cutting process. So lines here are going and lines there are going, and I'm offering up all of my lines.
Right.
Please, Lord, take them. There's so many.
Well, I think it's the 7th most. I think that I could be incorrect on this, but I think Benedict is the 7th most lines in Shakespeare for a male lead.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of course, Hamlet's number one, and
yeah.
I think Othello and Iago are right up there as well. But
yeah.
It's fascinating when you lose a couple of those lines and you go back and you go, oh, but I really like that line
yeah,
too,
because yeah,
they're
yeah.
all so beautiful. It's
yeah.
all such a rhythmic language. Yeah.
It really is, but Lord, take them. I'm not a great memorizer. They were made a joke about me yesterday. It was we were celebrating Gloria's birthday. It was yesterday, actually, and so they made a joke about me, and they said that I'm one of the producers of Whose Line Is It Anyway? Because Lord, I do not memorize well.
Well, our Tennessee Williams unscripted people would love to hear that.
Yes,
so.
Exactly.
That's
How
funny.
Do you think Amy Snowden would do as Beatrice?
Hey, now, boy, she'd be a saucy Beatrice, wouldn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, well, Beatrice is saucy.
Absolutely. Yeah. No kidding.
She's,
yeah.
She doesn't suffer fools, that's for sure.
I'd like to come see the show.
And I would be happy to have you.
Yeah.
Cool.
So please do.
Very nice. I think we've made another connection here.
I
Put
think
artists
so,
together on State of the Arts.
And I can
here.
Teach you some memorization skills, too.
You get a long line of people who have got behind.
Who have been trying to
yes.
teach you.
Yes, it's just not my strong
Maybe I'll
suit.
Bring something different to the table.
How long
that
will
sounded
the show?
Like that sounded like
Sounded interesting. To say the least.
Now, Chad, you've added in these songs. Yes. How long will the show run duration per night? Is it about 2 hours, a little more?
2 hours, yeah. Okay. It will not pass 2 hours.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
With the songs and everything,
right.
2 hours. That's amazing.
Yeah, we are not going to go over 2 hours for sure.
So get out there, see this great show, and then go get something to eat somewhere. Enjoy that.
And as we always say, put down the remote and get away from that TV and experience live theater.
That's right. Yeah. You won't be disappointed
live
with all the great shows
comedy.
We have going
Whatever
on.
Is live, go do it.
That's right. Get out of the house, see some live people performing. It's great for you. It's great for your children as well. So, shall we embarrass these two people?
I think so. I feel like we should.
Here on State of the Arts, we have a little tradition. It's mostly just made to keep Michael and I feeling good about our careers and all the disasters that have happened over the years. But we ask each of our performers who comes on to take a moment and kind of think of something in their past in live performance that was embarrassing or unexpected or got them arrested. You know, any of the normal kind of things we deal with every day. Does anybody have one that comes to mind, Amy?
Yeah, well, yeah, there is one. Yeah, I was asked to do this show down in Compton, and
first mistake.
I've heard never go to Compton in the rap song. My daddy told me do not go to Compton,
and you ignored that and went and took this job.
Absolutely did, right? And black crowds really love me, so I was not worried in the least.
Right?
You know, I just always thank them for welcoming me to the Apollo, and they love it because I'm the only white person in there. So my friend says, "Yeah, you know, we're gonna go down to Compton. It's gonna be a really great show. We go down there." Oh my God. I mean, it was even stacked up like the Apollo. I mean, they even had, you know, the things that went up like that.
Oh, really?
And they put me up first. And everything out of my mouth was just like, they were looking at me, they were going, "Oh no! Oh God, this is horrible." And I was just dying up there.
No.
Just dying up there. In fact, I left the stage about 3 minutes. I had 5 minutes. They gave me 5 minutes.
No.
So about 3 minutes, I said, "You know what? The hell with this. I can't take any more of this." And I had to walk to the door, but I crawled to the door. I literally like got down almost onto my knees and was like, and my knees are, they hurt so bad from all the sports I've played and stuff like that. I didn't care. I was like, "I'm getting the hell out of here, no matter if I have to hurt or not, if I need some knee surgery." And I'm going through the crowd, and these folks are just like, "Whoa, there she is." They're looking at me, and I'm going, "Oh God, get me out of here. God, get me out of here."
You know, there is nothing worse than as a comedian when you feel things going. I heard a story about Jim Carrey one time when he was first starting out, and of course he was very volatile anyways as an onstage comedian, and a friend of mine said that he was at a club, and Jim Carrey, I think it was in Toronto, and Jim Carrey bombed in a way that nobody's ever bombed before. I mean, he was offensive, he was rude, he was out of rhythm, everything was very strange, and so there's a grand piano on the stage, and Jim Carrey climbed into the piano, pretended to be a cockroach, and didn't come out for the rest of everyone else's set the entire night, like an hour and a half of comedy, just stayed in the piano. Yeah, there's nothing worse than that feeling of when you feel like it's not going the way you want.
You have to pass every single person that just saw you and just hated you.
Oh my God.
And it was all, I mean, I couldn't get out of there fast enough.
That's actually how I feel leaving the studio from this show. A little awkward.
Yeah. Chad Dorrit.
No, nothing embarrassing's ever happened to me.
Why, I've held everything in perfect control.
The first thing that comes to mind is I was reading for a big casting director for a pilot. And he looked at my headshot, and then he flipped my headshot around and was reading my resume. And he said, "Oh, tell me about the Johnson case." And I was like, I'm sorry, what are you talking about?
Something you made up on your resume.
Plainly again, he goes, "Tell me about the Johnson case." And I was like, I'm sorry, I really have no idea what you're
casting
talking about.
Casting confessions.
That was the first line of the sides. He had the sides.
Oh, you thought he was referencing. He can't say you weren't in the moment, Chad.
No. And I was like, how bad can I be that I don't know what the first line of the sides
are?
Wow. Yeah.
Now tell me you ended up getting that job.
No,
that'd be
I didn't.
A great end of that
I
story.
Didn't. That job was House.
Wow.
So I was not on that job.
Wow.
Got a really, really quick one.
I'm ready.
What I did. Okay, so I had an audition. Okay, this was a couple years ago. And it said, looking for a waitress, which I was a waitress for 8 years and absolutely hated it. Looking for a waitress that can get angry. And I thought, oh, that's me. I'm an angry waitress.
I'm meant for that role.
It's perfect. So I go down there and they put us in a room with about 40 or 50 actors. And I'm looking at the sides, and I'm thinking, I think I know this show. I think I've watched this show on the Cooking Channel. I'm not sure. So the lady goes,
the Cooking Channel.
Yeah, well, it was called Restaurant Impossible, where they accuse you of stealing money, and then you have to fight with them back. Well, this is what I said in front of them. I went, oh, excuse me. Yeah, I know this show. I said, those actors are absolutely horrible. Horrible.
Oh, no.
And she looked at me and I went, oh, God, you casted the show, didn't you? She went, yep. And I went, oh, shit. And I was done for. That was it. And I didn't get the job. But I had to say it. Because they were horrible actors and I had to say it.
Wow.
Well, you can hear what else she has to say in her own show, Casting Confessions, which has been extended by the Hollywood Fringe Festival for 3 encore performances, as we said, July 16th, the 24th, and July 30th, and tickets are available by going to Amy's Facebook page at Amy Snowden Comedy and Twitter at Amy M. Snowden. And ages 17 and over is being suggested for these performances. So good luck with that. And thank you for being on the show today, Amy.
You can also go see Chad Dorick in Much Ado About Nothing at the TU Studios, opening July 23rd. I'm sure that if they Googled your name and Much Ado About Nothing, that would pop up pretty quickly, correct? And what's the name of your company again?
It's the GGC Players.
GGC Players. Yeah. So if you want to look that up, get out there and see.
Yeah, the Gloria Gifford Conservatory is the school.
Gifford Conservatory.
She's a lovely lady, actually. I've met her. She did on Golden Pond.
Oh, yeah.
With Andrew...
Yeah. Prine.
Yes, Andrew Prine and, wow. And Salome Jens. And was a really amazing production.
Yeah, it was a great production. Right?
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Michael. It was great to see you again today, and great guest today. Thank you guys for coming in and for joining us. We greatly appreciate you being here.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.